And if you actually went out to Silicon Valley and you saw a resume of someone who had worked for four companies in 3 years, and this is like 3-4 years ago, you would say, oh my God, that must be an amazing software engineer. They worked at four hot companies, et cetera. Conversely, if you saw a resume of someone who was at the same company for 12 years and they weren't a co-founder, you'd say, must be something wrong.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. On today's episode, we're going to dive into the world of talent and talent acquisition and recruiting. I think this is a really important topic because I've seen some small businesses that they seem to be held back because they can't hire anybody other than their friends and family. And I've also seen a lot of businesses that have massively accelerated themselves because of how intentional they've been when it comes to who are they bringing onto their team. And so I think this is an important conversation to have, and to have that conversation, I wanted to bring in Evan Sohn, who is the CEO of Recruiter.com, to share some of his story and experience as a business owner, business builder, but also as the leader over there at Recruiter.com. So Evan, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing
today?
Hey,
thanks, Seth. Thanks for having me. And it looks like we have matching bookshelf designers. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we got some similarities there, which is always good. So Evan, I'm excited to dive into your world of recruiting a little bit. We talked beforehand, like this audience that we're speaking to is mostly small business owners, some aspirational, like people that maybe they're in management, maybe they're in a job right now, but they see that in their future. They want to start a business. Talk to me about, from your experience, how important for true like small businesses is the recruiting side of things. It seems to not necessarily be something that a lot of business owners are thinking about.
It's a great question. And again, thanks for having me on your show. You know, I started my first company in 1989. I was 21 years old. And grew that company over a decade, got acquired by one of the Dun & Bradstreet companies in 98. So I've done this a few times. And what's interesting is when someone asks me, you know, what's the most important thing to do when you're starting a company? It really starts there. It really starts with making sure you have the right people around you, making sure you have the right co-founders, the right partners, someone that's going to be aligned with your objectives. So it even starts before you hire your first employee, right? And before your first employee, it's who's at the table with you, Seth, that is aligned with your success, mm-hmm. with is aligned. So this way, you know, not just that they're finishing your sentences, you know, and all that other mm-hmm. jazz, but that you both are rowing the boat in the same direction. You know, you both are aligned with the same priorities. The next thing, obviously, is the most critical thing for every company is really its people. You know, that's really the challenge that we're all faced with today. And it's probably why we're actually talking, right? Is that it used to be, and forever, there were two ways to hire people. That's it. And by the way, my background, as I sort of mentioned, I'm not a recruiter. I'm a tech guy, more on the sales and operations side, but, you know, been around a bunch of different industries, right. Payments, security, et cetera. And there are two ways to hire. You either did it yourself or you hire someone else to do it for you. So if you did it yourself, and let's assume you're a giant company, you've got a ton of people working for you, and there are a ton of people hiring a ton of people. Right, you have this army of people internally that's actually doing all the hiring. But let's go down to, you know, the small business level. There are two ways to hire. You either did it yourself mm-hmm. or you hired someone else to do it for you. If you did it yourself, you would post the job somewhere. Could have been the New York Times 30 years ago. It could be ZipRecruiter, Indeed, and LinkedIn today. You collect resumes, you screen the resumes, you interview the candidates, you hire, you negotiate with the candidates, you bring them in, you're done. So you can either do that yourself, or you could hire a headhunter. And a headhunter would actually do the same exact thing that you just did. They would post the job. They would collect the resumes. Now, they would know better how to do it than you. They would write the job description. They would be able to negotiate back and forth with you of what to do. And they would actually do it for you. And you would pay them for their service. And you would pay them something like 20 to 30% of the actual salary, that headhunter model. So now let's go to the post-pandemic world. And the first question is now, or the first fact is, the job hopper economy is not going away, right? The tenure that your grandfather had working at a company or your grandparent is significantly longer than the tenure that you're going to have, right? And we're not going backwards. We're not going back to where someone worked at and got the 25-year anniversary watch. Those things just aren't really happening anymore. So hiring someone to find talent for you and paying 20 to 30% of a salary when that person's not going to leave, that person's not going to stay for 10 years, 5 years, 3 years, that just doesn't make financial sense anymore. If a person's leaving in 18 months, that just doesn't make any financial sense. Obviously, there are exceptions, you know, the senior, blah, 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 the chief, blah, 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 et cetera. So then it's, okay, we just want to do it ourselves. And I would argue with you that we would all want to do it ourselves if we actually had the time and the skill set to do it ourselves. So the challenge today is the influx that you're getting of resumes is tremendous. It's actually tremendous. So you're getting tons and tons more applicants today than you ever got before because it's so easy to apply for a job. You know, when I was a kid, applying for a job meant you print, got heavy stock paper for your resume, you printed it up, you wrote a cover letter, you went to the post office and mailed out 20 copies. And you were crazy for applying to 20 companies. Crazy. Now it's click, 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 click. So it's so easy. So what we've really done is created an environment where people are leaving faster. So who has the time to hire people on your own? Who has the money to pay someone else? Yet for every business that has people in it, and I would say 20 or more people in it, you're going to spend more money in 22 on hiring than you did in 2019. And certainly there's going to be a whole new era of people using talent acquisition professionals. Let's not call them recruiters just for a second, but a whole new group of people using talent acquisition professionals like never before.
So how does that look? How does that, on a practical level, how would that look for small businesses today? What would the relationship with a talent acquisition professional look like? You said it's not the 20 and 30% like it used to be.
Yeah. So we're really reinvent. I'm trying to avoid like promoting recruiter.com, but it's such a good fit for you guys. What it's really about is very, very similar to accounting in that regard, right? You run a business, Seth. Do you do your own tax return or do you have an accountant? Let's pretend for a moment that you have an accountant, right? Why do you have an accountant?
It's too complicated. Yeah.
Because it's complicated. You know you could do it yourself, but you might make mistakes. You don't want to make mistakes. You don't have the time to do it, et cetera. But by the way, you could take a two-week course and learn how to do all your accounting. But who has the time? That's not what I'm designed to do. I'm not designed to do my own accounting. So do you have a full-time accountant or you have a part-time accountant?
Part-time, yeah.
A part-time, right. You have someone that you leverage. And by the way, you might have a phenomenal relationship with this person. They're actually an extension of your business. Hey, Fred, I have a problem. I got a question for you. Something's actually happening, et cetera. Why isn't talent acquisition the same thing? Why are we moving down the path where talent acquisition is someone that that Seth can actually call on or anyone in your audience could call on and say, hey, Diane, hey, Fred, I have a question. I have a question about talent. I need help with a job description, et cetera. And they bill you for their time. That's what we provide. We are the Uber for talent acquisition. And that's what we provide. We have 40 plus thousand recruiters on our platform today. And we have recruiters out on assignment from Zoom and Pfizer and Moody's and ADP and many other customers to small businesses, law firms, advertising agencies, PR firms, accounting firms, et cetera, because everybody has a hard time finding people. And we've created a new way, I don't want to do it myself and I don't want to pay 30% of a salary. I actually want to pay someone for their time. You do not pay your accountant whether he gets you refunds back or he does a great job. You pay him for his time. And why not? Why not have a very controlled environment where you know exactly what you're paying for?
Yeah, that's an interesting like reframing of how we view that industry, but I think it's important. I know some of the challenges that I've had in this space and that I know a lot of our listeners do is when you're small you know, right now we have about 10 team members. When you're small, it's you have a hard time emotionally giving up that process as the business owner and giving it up. Like, I think a lot of small business owners, they like being emotionally invested in the process. And I think that can, I've seen that hold myself back. So how do you speak to those people?
Yeah. Yeah. So the answer is that, look, at the end of the day here, recruiting is a human interaction. And you're absolutely right. You know, no one is walking into my business or your business without actually speaking to somebody. And I don't care if you could own a restaurant, you're not hiring a waiter or a busboy or a clerk or a chef or a receptionist, no one who's actually speaking to the owner. So the question is, when do you get involved in that process? Right? When do you actually get involved in that process? Do you get involved at the beginning and you have to do the work all yourself? Or are you getting involved in the, hey, my recruiter, do me a favor, find the people that I want, screen them with these questions, schedule them for me, and then help me bring them over the line. And like I said, you know, you're responsible for generating the revenues of your business. Your accountant is responsible for putting them all in an order, keeping them fashioned, and moving someone down the process in order for you to be able to file your tax returns accordingly.
Yeah. What were some of the mistakes you made in your earlier businesses from a recruiting or talent perspective that then later on you're like, okay, I'm gonna handle the people side of business or hiring differently?
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say I was always hiring late. So it was always this, oh my God, you know, there's a water coming out of the dam. Go get someone to plug it up. I don't really care as much what they look like. Now there's something good about, you know, for me, I hate being wrong. So if the dam is broken, it's much easier to say, look, I would have spent more time finding somebody, but the dam was broken. I needed someone to plug it up. So I think that was probably a general mistake that I made. I think one of the better decisions I made 1,000 years ago, now that you're asking me, is I actually brought in like a third party consulting firm on the development side to do some very serious development for us. And, you know, it was someone that I probably never would have been able to hire full time, but they came in and they got a great job done specifically. So I thought that was actually, you know, very, very good. I think the other is, when you're running a business, there's a human element to it also. And so parting ways faster. I've never, ever heard anyone ever say the expression, I wish I would have fired them later. Right? I wish I would have done that later. So it's always, I should have done it sooner. So I think that's probably, some of the more people-oriented mistakes. And again, I think part of the challenge that we all have as small businesses is that we change faster than the person. Our businesses evolve faster than the individual. When you're in a big company, the individual evolves faster. So Seth at a big company, hey, I've done this for a year. I want to go do something else. You might have to move divisions in the big company to get that done. When you're in a small company, the rules are changing, every 6 months. You know, what you did 6 months ago hopefully resembles what you're doing today, but the challenges that the business is facing are different. And I think there'll be some alignment that comes out of that as well.
How are you seeing the last 2 years of the Great Resignation is connected to the pandemic, but just the workplace has shifted a lot in the last 2 years. A lot of people have called part of that shift the Great Resignation. How are you seeing that impact recruiting efforts, hiring efforts? It's just been a weird time to hire people.
Yeah, it's crazy. So a few things have actually changed. And some of these were actually already in motion, right? You know, so we all believe that there's nothing new. Right. It just got expedited. So, you know, I spent a bunch of years out in Silicon Valley. And if you actually went out to Silicon Valley and you saw a resume of someone who had worked for 4 companies in 3 years, and this is like 3-4 years ago, you would say, oh my God, that must be an amazing software engineer. They worked at 4 hot companies, et cetera. Conversely, if you saw a resume of someone who was at the same company for 12 years and they weren't a co-founder, you'd say, must be something wrong. So we already start to see that out on the left coast working its way towards the rest of the country. I think the other thing that's really, really changed is, so there are two things that really changed. One is the ability to move faster. So look at your office, right? You are in your office today. If you left the company and went to a different company, your office wouldn't change, mm-hmm. assuming you're working remotely. So all the jobs that we did not look at because they were geographically undesirable just doesn't exist anymore. We can work anywhere we want. And by the way, even the company that says, look, I want you to come in once a week or every other week, again, people will start making concessions for the right talent, with obviously there are exceptions. A factory has to have workers. JP Morgan Chase has said you have to come into the office. So there's certain exceptions there. But the other thing that's really changed is that we've made it so easy to leave. So you have no geographic, wall anymore, right? Your office doesn't change. So remember, you'd stay at a company. Why? The commute was easy. I like the people. They're fun. If you're not going into the office, you're a hybrid. Those things matter far, far, far less than they did pre-pandemic when you had this sort of culture building with your own in-person environment. The other thing that's happened is interviewing is so much easier now, right? You know, 10 years ago, think about what interviewing was 10 years ago or 5 years ago. In person, you got to take the afternoon off. Maybe you're getting on an airplane, et cetera. Now it's a video. It's a video resume. It's a video interview. It's just so much easier to do. So the only thing that was keeping Seth in his spot, right? The only thing that was keeping your listeners, employees in their spot was they didn't want to be that person that was job hopping every 2 years. But that's gone. That stigma is gone. So if you're, so think about, you know, we do this monthly recruiter index. We survey our recruiters. We publish the results. I talk about them like on CNBC and stuff like that. You know, so if you are, you know, so here you are, and if someone offers you $5,000 more to do the same job you're doing today in the same location you're doing today, right, why wouldn't you just take a look at it? Who cares? What's the difference? And when someone says to you, hey, Seth, why do you go from company A to company B? Well, they offered me $5,000 more. Well, okay, I get it. I'm doing my job. I'm just going to go make more money. So what's interesting is we're seeing people leave their job for more money, but they're taking jobs for work-life balance and money. So, hey, you know, you don't want to go in more than once a week. I'm offering you more money and I won't let you, and you can come in every other week or whatever it is, you know? So I am right, adjusting to that as well. One final thing, I always like talking about this, is that, you know, when we say the word great resignation, it really is the greater resignation. So the US has attrition. Every month people quit their jobs. Either they're quitting out of the workforce or they're moving. There is a natural attrition in the US. The number is about 22%. So on average. So on average in 2019, 3.5 million people quit their jobs. This is quit, not layoffs. Quit. So when you see the number 4.3 million people quitting or 4.5 million people quitting, those are tremendous numbers, but it's a million more than normal. Not it's not like zero people quit in March. Right. Of 2019, and oh my God, 4.5, you know, and the media makes it sound like this. Oh my God, it's now again, it's a lot. Don't get me wrong, it's a lot, right. But it's a greater resignation.
Yeah. Well, and there was a buildup too, to where, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, there, even if you break down on a monthly basis, you know, you break that number down, there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that are normally quitting on a monthly basis. So then some of those people are let go because of the pandemic. Some of them are furloughed, whatever. But a lot of people all of a sudden, like I know many people that were thinking about transitioning out, but then it was like, man, I'm so lucky to have a job right now. So then they hold on to their job longer. And so then in the last year, we saw things somewhat normalize. And then I think there's a lot of people that were like, okay, well, I made it through there. I'm not so worried that I'm not going to be able to find a job right now. And so now it's time to resign. So you had this massive buildup and then a little bit of a wave.
Yeah. And I would say, look, we predicted that it would slowed up by the summer and replaced with the job hopper economy. So that means that you're going to see a greater attrition than you had in 2019, but not at the great resignation levels. Yeah. And by the way, there are so many factors. Yep. Hey, I liked being home with the family. That's not so bad. right? You know, so gee, mm-hmm. I was getting on an airplane on Monday, coming home on Friday. You know what? I like that. I like the lifestyle of being home. So I'm going to go switch a job where I can actually be home. There's so many reasons. I lost childcare. Grandma used to watch my children. They don't do it anymore. I think the other thing that we don't take into account, and I don't know how you do it, but here's an interesting statistic. There were more businesses started in 21 than in any other year.
Wow.
So now I doubt these were like, you know, hardware stores, your right. local hardware store or coffee shop. It's that people are starting up their own LLC, right? They're starting mm-hmm. up their own business. So this is a small business storyteller. More businesses were started in 21 than ever before. So I actually speculate, and I have some data around it, that pre-COVID, so let's assume Seth was a really hardworking guy pre-COVID. Seth actually worked at a factory pre-COVID. And Seth actually worked at two factories. He did two shifts in a consumer factory. There's usually two shifts, maybe more. One is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. The other one is Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Run them 12 hours, all this other stuff. So what, and I'm exaggerating right. just to prove a point. So what happens? Seth's working at one factory Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. He's working 13 hours a day. He's getting benefits there, goes home, does his thing. And on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, works at the other factory. Mary, you got to make ends meet. You got a wife, you got kids, all this other stuff. Pandemic comes, you furloughed, whatever it is, PPP money, they're giving you money, they're giving you unemployment, all this other stuff. What happens during the pandemic, you actually start a business. Now, maybe you're not podcasting, maybe you're driving DoorDash or Uber, or you're working for TaskRabbit or something like that. So now COVID's over, or the pandemic's over, and the factory says, come back to work. And you go, you know what? I'm going to go back to the first one. I'm going to go back to working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Maybe I'm going to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm only going to work 10 hours a day. So I'm going to give myself a little bit more reprieve. And Thursday and Friday, I'm going to go work at TaskRabbit, DoorDash, and Uber and make the same money. I only need healthcare at one company. Right. So you're not seeing the number goes down, but you're still making money. And we don't track that here in the US. We track like jobs and unemployment and open jobs. Like we're tracking interesting data. But yet you got to draw some different, you got to thread the needle in a couple of different ways to get to the right information. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think everything you're saying is really interesting, Evan. I'm curious to, as it becomes more popular for, I guess, as it becomes destigmatized for people to be job hopping. And as you said, you know, if I can make $5,000 more doing the same thing from where I'm at than I was, why not? What does that mean for hiring for businesses? What does that mean for small businesses that keeping people is going to be a lot harder?
Yeah, now? There's no question about it. So it really depends on the business. So I'll give you some of the guidance or advice that I'm giving folks are don't treat the job as a lifetime job, right? Don't promote it as you're going to be here forever. Because the young generation, they do not want to be here forever.
And don't have that expectation as the owner.
They don't. In fact, they want an experience.
Yeah.
So I would use language that says, you're going to learn so much in the next 2 years. You're going to come out of here in two years, three years, with such a great understanding of fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Right? By the time you're done here, so you're almost writing their next job for them. You're almost saying, by the time you're done here, oh my God, you can go work there, but if you stay here, if you come here for 2 years, what you're going to be doing here in 2 years is amazing. And do me a favor, I need you to check in with me regularly to make sure that we are addressing the things that you want to be able to do. Do them here. You want to go learn something? Do them here. So that's one. The second is, I think really showing progression to your people is important. You know, in the old days, Seth would come in and say, hey, I need a raise. We give Seth a raise, and I would say, all right, I don't have to worry about Seth anymore. I'm good for a year, right? There's no way Seth's coming back in a year and asking me for more money. That doesn't happen. That doesn't work anymore, right? It just doesn't. So what you really want to do is to say to Seth, hey, Seth, here's your progression this year. I'm going to give you X now. You're going to get Y at this milestone, Z at this milestone, and here's where I want you to be throughout this year. I'm going to show you progression. So if you leave before your next milestone, that's going to cost you money. I think those were really like two big things that we were telling people to do. I think there's one other, I think, for small businesses. And I just saw an article about this morning about recruiting moms. I think that as a small business, we have an opportunity to recruit what I call the 80% employee. You know, in a day and age where we're all freaked out about how connected we are, and I got to shut down, I got to turn things off, why actually not create a role for a person that says, hey, you know what? I'm going to pay you $100,000 a year. That's your base salary is $100,000, but I'm only paying you 80% of it. So I'm going to pay you what you want. I'm going to pay you $100,000. I'll pay you I'll make it an extra 10%, but I'm going to pay you 80% of it. But I only want you to work 80% of the time. I don't want you working here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I only want you working here 4 days a week. You pick the days, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and either half a Tuesday, half, whatever you want to do, because you're actually going to attract people that want that quality of life. And by the way, if they have that quality of life, right, let's assume you create a great role for someone in your company. It's a working mother. She works, but she stops working every day at 3:30, right? You're only paying her 80%, but she doesn't feel compelled to pick up a phone after 3:30 anytime because she's got the kid. Where's she going to go? Why would she want to leave? You're paying her what she wants. She's not beholden to, you know, replying to Slack 24/7. She has her quality of life. And I think those types of roles are going to be very, very interesting for small businesses, because it's going to be a great way to get great talented people without having to pay through the nose. And right. This article is like, you know, recruiting moms. Give someone a great opportunity where you're not going to kill them. You're not, you want their skill set. You don't want their, you know, you don't want them clocking in and out. You want their skills.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting how the conversation has changed. And even in our space, like, we're very much in the gig economy. Like, we're a podcast agency and we produce podcasts for businesses across the country. So a lot of our workers, you know, they're contractors and they want to be contractors. Like, if I hired them that, you know, gave them this full-time salary package, that wouldn't, you know, that would take away their freedom. That would take away them being able to work on three or four projects that they really, really love. And so for us, we've shifted towards being like, great, we want to empower like the gig economy for you. We want to, like, if that's what you want. We've tried to be really communicative with our team of knowing, hey, what do you want? What do you want over the next couple of years? Because we've realized we need to try and fit into what they're wanting, because the workplace is shifting so quickly. But I think that question of really knowing, like, your team members you're bringing in, like, what, knowing what they want in the next few years, yeah, is, I think it's shifted towards where that question is really, really important, as opposed to it just being what
we
want.
That's right. You know, we have talent advisors. So we run this thing called Time to Promote. We run a program called My Recruiter. If you actually go to start.recruiter.com, it's a program specifically designed for small businesses where you can get a fractional, you know, a professional fractional on-demand recruiter, talent advisor, who will help you, you know, help your business with whatever you need, sourcing candidates, filling out job descriptions, scheduling for you, et cetera. They'll do it all. We have different month-to-month programs, really, really, really simple, you know, made it really simple. But when I was talking to the folks designing the program, you know, they will sit down and go, hey, Seth, why should someone come work for you? Mm-hmm. Right. So in other words, think about the world. It's not like, well, here's the pay, here's the benefits, et cetera. I get that. What's special about working for Seth? Right. What's the thing? We love dogs. We have every Wednesday we post up dog picture. I'm making it up, you know, but like, what's the thing that would attract someone that's going to be that special thing? And by the way, it's a really interesting question, because it's getting people to think about what makes them interesting. What keeps them interesting?
Right. Yeah. And if I don't have a good answer to that, if my only answer is
money,
you get a paycheck.
That's right.
Then you're, I, like, no longer stand out.
Hmm.
Right.
You know, oh, well, we're doing this. It's fun. It's exciting. Or, hey, look, you know, here's the interesting thing. I heard this podcast a couple weeks ago, and it was the CEO of a company, and he was an engineer. And they asked him, what's your work? Blah, 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 blah. And he goes, look, I was running a company pre-pandemic. We came into the office. We coded. We went home with our families. We didn't hang out with beer. We didn't do any of those things. So the answer, Seth, is that you get to sort of create the environment that you want. If you want to run a cold and heartless environment, go do it. Now, you're not going to attract people that want that warm, cozy, you know, everyone high-fiving each other thing. But yeah. Look, you know, look what you've done. You've actually created an environment where it says, hey, look, we want you to have this is not a full-time job, guys. This is a gig. We're a great opportunity for you to have a gig. And that's great. That's a great thing because the expectations are really there. So by the way, mm-hmm. what you've actually created is when that individual goes to look at another opportunity, what that individual is saying to himself is this going to mess up my job, my gig with Seth? Right? Gee, I don't want to I love that gig with Seth. I don't want to mess that up. Now, if you were saying, look, right. this is a full-time job, you're focused, you can't do anything else, they're going to go like, well, this is better than that, so I'm going to go there. Instead, it's, gee, I want to be incremental. I'm making money. I want to keep making money in a fun way.
Yeah. Well, and another thing we saw with that too is we have one worker, one of our best workers right now. They're getting ready to go get an education. They're getting ready to go to college. So they talked with us about that process. And they're pretty much looking at this job that is a part-time gig job, but still pretty substantial on the hour side.
Yeah, it's great.
They're planning on working it all the way through college. And another person on our team, they're saying they're not ready to go back and get their master's yet, but they know in a couple of years they want to. And so as we're getting them into another position, they're saying, I really love the flexibility of this because I want to be able, in a couple of years, I want to do my master's and I'll probably have to move to do that. And so I love being connected to a job that I could do through that. And so I think what you're saying is right on in a sense of it's self-awareness from the business owner and from the businesses of, we have to know what team we want. And we have to be clear about those expectations and what value we can help. In a way, sometimes it feels like we're selling ourselves
to your team, but
if you want to attract the right team, you have to.
There's no question about it. I'll give you one other anecdote. A friend of mine hired another friend of mine's son for a summer. And by the time they were a college kid, and he did a great job there in the summer, and he actually built a skill set writing one report for that company. One report. It's a real estate firm. They have lots of different things. It was one report. That's it. For the last 3 years, all year long, they paid him to write that one report. That's it. He went to school. He had other jobs. He did every month. He was paid to generate that report. And you look at that balance there and you're like, that, first of all, this is 3 years, they were before their time. What a great opportunity. Here's a company. We right. needed a specific skill. This individual filled that skill. We had no expectations of doing anything else than that one task that this person was doing. And it was done for 3 years, right? To the individual doing the role, they had a gig. Here's my gig. Once a month, I do this report. Once a month, I get paid. Like, right. why would I want to give that up? And no matter what they're doing, like they just, I saw the email, they had just resigned because they got a full-time job, they graduated. But like, it was like that, you know, reminding me of what a great opportunity to sort of have that skill aligned right. with what the company needs in a very, very specific action. So yeah. kudos.
Yeah, that's a great story. And I think, you know, as we wrap this up,
the small business storyteller. So there's a story.
It is. I had to tell a story. We got to have the stories on here. And I think, you know, I'm walking away from this thinking, I guess, reminded of the intentionality behind hiring and intentionality behind recruiting. I think, you know, decades ago, it was, you know, okay, here's your job, here's your pay. And it was a little bit more like, okay, you need bodies and seats and they'll do the jobs. And I think that with small businesses now, small businesses are unique. Everybody has different, every business owner has different motives. I think we have to know those motives and we need to integrate, you know, why we're doing what we're doing into the hiring process and be intentional if we want to attract the right people. What would be kind of your closing words of encouragement to small business owners who they get a little bit of anxiety when they think about the growing the team piece because there's just so many unknowns?
No, I would agree. I would say that let's draw another analogy and use security as the analogy. So 20 years ago, maybe more, security was the guard at the gate who checked your ID. We now have incorporated security into everything that we're doing. We're paying for it. We're hosting it. Our email supplier, VPN, all the things that we're doing. So every one of your listeners has allocated money to internet security. Everybody, everyone's done it. Internet security, et cetera. We've made it part of our experience. We've added complexity to our lives in order to address the need for security. I believe that the talent acquisition and retention will follow the same thing. So you're going to spend money on talent. You spend money on payroll, right? You're maybe using a third-party payroll system because it got too complicated. So now you're using a third-party payroll company that handles all your payroll for you. Talent acquisition is going to be that element that every company of size is going to need to spend money on. And to your listeners, I would start to prepare for it. Figure out what you need. Figure out what your bench is going to look like. Figure out how many people are going to be resigning or quitting in the next year. Just think about those things and really, really start to assess your own talent portfolio.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great advice. Where can people find you and any resources you're putting out? Sure. If they want to be more in touch with the work you're doing.
Yeah. So you can reach me at evan@recruiter.com. Nice and simple, EVAN. But I would go to recruiter.com for all the information. We have tons and tons of articles and stories. We have blogs on lots of things. We blog like, I think we publish like 2 to 3 articles a day regarding talent, all things related to talent. So I would go to recruiter.com and check it out. And if you're interested in getting started, you can go to start.recruiter.com and get your own My Recruiter.
Love it. Evan, thank you so much for joining us on the Small Business Storytellers. We will have links to all of the resources that were mentioned in the show notes below to our listeners. And thank you so much for joining us, Evan.
Thanks so much, Seth. And let's catch up again in a couple of months, see how we're doing.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.